wants the fans on. Half of the room wants the fans off.
So, here's Russell with step nine.
Whoa. Hi, everybody. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm a member of the Carl Gables group from Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's great to be here, and I haven't found it necessary to have a drink, nor have I had a drink, since January 25th, 1981, and I'm grateful for that, and I don't know. I don't think that qualifies me for being an old-timer I went over to the international, every 5 years you have the, just to see whether I qualified yet, and I went over the old timers. They said, "No, you got to have 40 years." They keep moving the ball. Yeah. My sponsor, my second sponsor, Joe Snyder, told me. He says, "You know, I don't even consider you sober until you have 10 years." And so when I had 10 years, I said, "I got 10 years." And I says, "I meant 20." You know, good sponsors do crap like that too. You know, they just keep you in your place. You know, what did Tebow say? He says, "You got to have ego deflation and death every once in a while." Just sort of puncture that ego, you know, that kind of thing. So that's a good thing. So it's good to be here. Talk a little bit about step nine and some principles having to do with that. And I hope you all have sponsors. Sponsors are so important. Sponsors and going to step meetings and reading the 12 and 12 and reading all the books and learning how to do this stuff and, you know, certainly being willing to do it. So I want to share a couple things. I'll tell you what, I hate fear. Fear is a very interesting thing. I'm going to talk a little bit about fear tonight. Because I think step nine, I think all the steps have to do a little bit with fear, but I think step nine has a lot to do with the with that deal. And I want to read a couple of things to you out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it says, men and women drink because they drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. I'll bet you knew that. That's one of those things you read in the big book and you say, man, that guy knows what he's talking about. I could use a drink right now. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit that it is injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. You know, it's an interesting idea. You know, I've been sober for about 31 years, and, you know, I read these things over and over and over again. And what I found is sometimes I'll read something in the big book that I know I've read 10,000 times. I just sort of read it, you know. It sounds good. I never understand what it means. I never quite get it. I never get it in an application unless somebody sits down and says, well, what that means is this. And you say, wow, I never thought of it that way. You just sort of read stuff, and they sort of go over you. And then somewhere around, you know, you're 20 years sober, and you're sucking on your thumb because the IRS is closing down your business or something's happening, and you pick up the big book because, you know, after a lot of thinking, everything else has failed and nothing's doing any good, and you haven't figured out how to, you know, save yourself by using your brain, and so you say you finally reached the end of your rope, so at that point in time, you might as well look at the big book, and then you see this sentence that you've read 1,000 times, and it's the perfect sentence for what's going on in your life right now, and all of a sudden it has meaning. And all of a sudden you see the exact right picture, and all of a sudden it means something to you. And that's the way this thing sort of works. It sort of creeps up on you. You know, you don't think you're getting anywhere. You think that you're like going 3 steps forward and 5 steps back. You don't think it's like working. And then one day something happens in your life, and all of a sudden you sort of open up this book and you read it, and all of a sudden you got a whole new view on things. And it sort of like works in conjunction with having the crap knocked out of you. It's like that thing in James, you know, the book of James, which we were almost named James. So it says, rejoice when you have trials and tribulations. Because when you have trials, perseverance through trials, you know, what it does is it matures your faith. It makes you, gives you. So it's almost like reading the big book, developing a faith in God, and having the crap knocked out of you. If you have the faith and you do this stuff, actually works to your betterment. Actually fixes you up, and then you start realizing that they're right about that seventh step, about the there is a value in suffering. You know, we got a lot of that stuff, you know. We went around this planet trying to figure out how not to suffer. how to avoid suffering. That's what drinking's all about, avoiding suffering, avoiding fear, avoiding this, avoiding that. When we didn't realize that the only way to really grow up is to sort of like dive right into that suffering thing. Just dive right into that deal. But we didn't do that because, you know, we don't do well. Alcoholics don't do well with pain. We're sort of, you know, sensitive, right? So it says touchy. To them, they're alcoholics. So what does that mean? It says, you know, they cannot have to differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. I like that one. I like that. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. So you see, they're not even talking about drinking. I mean, they're talking about drinking, but they're talking about, they say to them, they're alcoholic. Because there's apparently a non-alcoholic life, a sober life, and there's something called an alcoholic life, which probably has something to do with drinking, don't you think? But, you know, I'll tell you, if you're an alcoholic, you see, you know, it's like the old story about the gal that didn't realize her husband was an alcoholic until one day he came home sober. You know, I think what happens if you're an alcoholic and you feel crappy about yourself and you hate yourself and you hate everything about yourself, and you constantly realize you're no good and nothing good's going to happen, and even if something good's happening to you, it's soon going to be snatched away anyway because you're a piece of shit and you don't deserve anything anyway. And you're constantly looking at other people, and you always seem to look at the other people that seem to be doing on the outside better than you feel on the inside. And when you're constantly having thoughts like, you know, you don't deserve to live, you know, and, you know, what's the use of even trying? It's all going to turn out like bullshit anyway because nobody really cares about you or anything. You're all alone and all that. All those crazy thoughts that we have that sort of come from, like, the planet Mars, you know, all those self-defeating, sabotaging things, you know, that kind of stuff that goes on. And you know, and then you add on, like, maybe a pinch of who's going to be at the party, you know, because if he's going to be there, I'm not going, or if she's going to be there. All those people that sort of populate your brain that seem to be standing in the background, that sort of hedge you in as to where you can go and where you can't go, and what you have to, you know, that stuff that you don't even think it's bothering you, but it's there, it's just sitting there when you sort of rise up, you know, and somehow that's sort of like, somehow all those people, you know, are there to sort of like help tell yourself that you're a piece of crap, you know what I mean? That just so, and you don't even realize it's so non-concrete. I mean, the thoughts are coming so fast and there's so many of them and they're way deep background. It's sort of like they're undercover CIA thoughts, you know what I mean? They're so undercover, under the covers, you know? Sometimes every once in a while a man or a woman or a situation from the past or something will pop up and you'll see it and then you try to push it down or make it go away, but it never quite goes away. It's sort of there. You know what I mean? And all you know is you get these thoughts and these feelings and these emotions, and you're so weighed down by the guilt thing. You don't know it's good. You're so weighed down by the fear thing, and you don't even know you're scared, you know? And of course, that's another reason to hate yourself, because you might as well hate yourself because you're a coward, you know? And then you worry about whether people find out what a piece of crap and what a coward you are. You know what I mean? And that kind of stuff. And I'm not talking about you guys, because I can tell you're a higher class of alcoholics. I'm talking about, you know, the people down at my home club, you know what I mean? Those kind of alcoholics. And, you know, my own personal life. This is just my own personal testimony, okay? So when all that stuff is going on inside of you, and you're a nothing, and you realize you're going to be a nothing, and you're always going to be a nothing, it's never going to work out for you, you know? And, I mean, that's why you drank, right? You know, because, you know, I used to put something on my body that turned me into an almost. When you're nothing, almost the top of the world, you know? It makes you feel like you're something, like you're alive, like you can connect or something, rather than being this variegated piece of crap that you are when you're sober. So when that's sort of going on in your life all the time, and you don't even know, and here's the crazy thing is, I can't even tell you where it comes from. You know, I can't even do the psychological thing. Well, maybe my mother dropped me on my head when I was six, or maybe it came from my parents' divorce. Because I can't even think of a time in my life, truthfully, when I didn't have that stuff going on in me. I can't think of a time in my life where I wasn't insecure about who I was and what I was, where I didn't feel ill at ease. I can't think of a time in my life where I didn't feel like there was something wrong, where I felt different. I can't say, well, at 6 years old I was better, or at 10 years old I was better. I always felt the way I'm telling you I feel, the way I feel. You know, the only difference is when I got to be about 15, 16, 17, you know, I discovered Colt 45 malt liquor. You know, and I discovered liquor, you know, and that sort of, you know, helped assuage that situation. But the bottom line is I can't even remember. And you know something? Most of the time prior to my drinking liquor, you know, I felt that way, you know, sober. That's what they must mean when they say men and women drink because they like the effect produced by you know, alcohol. They like the effect. And so they say the alcoholic life seems the only normal one. When they say the alcoholic life, I think they're talking about all that stuff I was just talking about. You know, it's really, it's interesting. We ultimately, after 15, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years of drinking, we come to the realization, or I came to the realization, that I needed help. I couldn't stop drinking. As a matter of fact, I remember saying this to this guy. This is on when I took my first step. I mean, I didn't say, I looked the guy in the eye, he told me a little bit about himself. I didn't say, I'm powerless over alcohol, my life has become unmanageable. I didn't say that. You know, I'm not saying you need to say that. I'm not sure anybody says that. You say other things. What I said was I looked the guy in the eye and I said, I need help. I can't stop drinking. Now, probably 2 weeks before that, I'd say, I need help. I need $100. I'd say, I need help. I need my girlfriend back. Or I need help. I need my car back. I need all this stuff back. And somehow, for some reason, and you want to know something? I think that I was an alcoholic even before I said that. In other words, I think that I suffered from alcoholism and I was powerless from alcohol even when I was saying I needed my girlfriend back. In other words, there was a point in time where all of a sudden it came up and I realized, I said, I need help. I can't stop. With all the crap I had going on in my life, with all the problems with people, with all the problems with money, with all the problems with the girlfriends, with all the problems with the job, with all the problems with the stuff that I would always talk about in the bars and all over the place, somehow, even with all that crap going on, there was a point in time in my life, around January, you know, 25th, 1981, where I looked the man in the eye and said, I need help, I can't stop drinking. Where does that happen where it gets to the point with an alcoholic where it becomes so obvious? I mean, I think it's a blessing. I think it's a gift. You'd like to think it happens to everybody. I don't think it happens to everybody. I was just on the phone coming down here. I'm constantly receiving phone calls from men and women who are in their 40s and 50s who are destroying themselves, and you know something? It hasn't happened to them. It hasn't happened to them. You guys are like lucky. You guys are fortunate. You are blessed. You know, you can't imagine the people that are out there that are swimming in this disease. You know, and they're saying things like, well, A is not for me, you know, because I don't want to label myself an alcoholic. You know, you can't, and they just keep on going down and down and down. And somewhere about 31 years ago, I looked the man in the eyes and I said, I need help. I can't stop drinking. What I had to go through, whatever had to happen, how God had to touch me in order to get me to the point where I could actually say that. And, you know, the first step in getting out of jail is knowing you're in jail in the first place, to at least be able to focus on that. But here's the thing, and then you come in here, and your whole fight is on that level. In a sense, that's what you're constantly fighting. And you're doing wonderful things, like picking up red chips for 3 months, and, you know, white chips for, you know, desire to stop, and blue chips for 6 months. And like the people are picking up, you know, I haven't stopped drinking, it's all about the drinking. And how much time has to go on before all of a sudden you realize all the other stuff? All the other old ideas, all the other crap that kept you from being free, that was going on, listen to this, long before you even had a drinking problem, which is really just as much a part of your alcoholic life. As a matter of fact, it's the cause and condition. The drinking is but the symptom. We come in here on the thing that is really, oh, thanks a lot, the coffee. Am I the only one in the entire room that got coffee? And just when they were liking me, you know. Yeah, well, anyway, I appreciate it. So, and all of a sudden, you know, what has to go on? But, you know, that's the deal. We start realizing that we got some other stuff going on. And it seems absolutely natural to us, you know. I mean, sponsors say these weird, you go up to sponsors with all sorts of problems. And, you know, they're real problems. And they say things like, why are you worried about that? And I said, what do you mean, why am I worried about that? What do you mean, why am I worried about that? I said, why does it bother you? What do you mean, why does it bother me? You never answer the question. You know what I mean? Because you don't even know what the answer is. You're just amazed that, you know, and then all of a sudden you realize that apparently there are people in here that the same kind of stuff happens and it doesn't bother them. That's like an amazing deal. Because your alcoholic life seems the only normal life. You think, well, I'm broke, of course I'm worried. You'd worry too. And I said, well, yeah, then you find that there are people that have money problems and they don't worry about it. They don't complain about it. You have people that have, you run into people that have cancer and they never complain about it. They never talk about it. And you got people in here that all they do is talk about their problems. And you start realizing that as you go through here and you bounce into people with more time and less time, you realize that not only is the drinking, that nobody's drinking in AA, nobody's drinking in AA, but you realize that all of a sudden that there are some people that are playing this game a little bit differently than other people. Not that they're better or worse, but there's some people that are not only not drinking, they're not worrying. They're not fearing. They're not feeling guilty. You know, they're not getting caught up in crazy situations and crazy love affairs. You know what I mean? They're not. They're minding their own business. They're not getting involved in stuff that has nothing to do with them. You know, they're clear thinking. They seem to have answers. You start realizing there's some other stuff going on in here. There are people that are doing this stuff, and that's basically what these steps are about. That's basically what, you know, it says in the book, what does he say when he talks, and we didn't invent it in AA, this has been going on for years. Dr. Young said to whatever the guy's name was, Roland Hazard, he said, here and there, once in a while, it's a spiritual thing. It says, ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which are the driving force of these men's lives, are cast to one side, and they become dominated by a whole other set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes. Whole other deal going on in here. But you know, before you get to that point, you really don't even see what the problem is. You know, because it seems, because our alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, discontented, unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks, just like that. And so we're really at the promises, and I want to look at the promises a different. I'm going to suggest you look at the promises a little bit differently than really most of us look at it. So I want to flip to them. I think it's on page 83, right? And I'm going to suggest something to you. Okay? It says, "If we are, have you guys heard the promises before? Has everybody heard the promises here?" So let me read them to you, and then I'm going to suggest something to you, okay? If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we're halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. So I want to start off by saying, and I talk about this from experience, not from theory. You know, it's an experiential thing. You know, if you haven't experienced, you won't understand. Well, start off with saying you this. You're going to experience something new. You experience something new. Anybody ever seen the movie 2001 Space Odyssey? Yeah. I mean, you'd have to be brain dead not to have seen it. I don't want to insult somebody. No, you see that movie? It's a wild movie by Stanley Kubrick. You know what it reminds me? You know what this reminds you of in that movie? When you see, what is that? That embryo guy? Or what? The guy who died? You know, what was the guy's name? Does anybody remember his name?
Embryo guy.
Oh, the guy who died, the astronaut that died. I don't know, Kier DeLue or something, whatever. Kier, whatever his name is. And he keeps on saying to the other astronaut who's alive, he says, something's going to happen. He says, what? He says, something wonderful. That's all he says. He says, something wonderful. He says, what's going to happen? He says, it's something wonderful. You know what they say? It says, you're going to know a new freedom and your new happiness. It's going to be new. It's not going to be, when you say, what's it going to be like? Well, I can't tell you what it's going to be like because you've never experienced this deal before. Because you want to, as alcoholics, and you know, I'll tell you this too. It's not only confined to alcoholics. Regular people live an alcoholic life in many respects, and they haven't received it. You know, the novelist says, most people live lives of quiet desperation. So as alcoholics, you're actually blessed because you're going to have a shot of living a life that regular earth people, I'll call them earth people, that regular people are going to be amazed at. I've seen regular people go to AA meetings and hang out with AA people and say things like, why don't they have things like this for non-alcoholics? Now, of course, they do. They have Al-Anons and things like that and all sorts of CODA meetings and all that sort of stuff. But the truth is, this thing that we, that, you know, as you know, I'm a Christian, we would call it bondage. we would call them straight, and it would be a different jargon, you know, we'd use different words, but basically the same thing. It would be caught up in bondage to idols or something like that. What we call is, you know, defects in character, or what Bill Wilson called the next step, the next frontier in Alcoholics Anonymous, emotional sobriety. It's because we have unhealthy dependencies. It's because we have dependencies on things that are inimical to our health, that weigh us down, that make us feel crappy, that will allow us to be a success. And here's this, we don't even know we got them because they're so normal to us. And we've had them ever since we're 6 years old. We wouldn't even know how to live life without them because it's so natural. If you assault that deal and say to somebody, why do you have that? They'll just get pissed off and they'll be mad and they'll get mad at you. It'll be just like if you say, just like we said last week, why do you drink the way you'll do? They'll say, screw off. You know what I mean? They're so used to feeling crappy about themselves. They're so used to thinking this way that if you even propose the fact that you don't, not only don't you have to drink, you don't have to think, they say, what are you, stupid? They can't even see it. They don't even want to see it. It's like it's trying to explain to them to stop drinking because they want to. The truth is what they want to do somehow, some way, they want to hang on to that deal. Like I said to my sponsor, I said, well, that's my personality. I do something, he says, that's my personality, that's the way I am. And he'd say, Russ, your personality is killing you. And I love my personality. You know, we love our personalities in here. You know, what do I do if I give up my fantastic personality? You know, the guy who yells and screams and cries and whines and gets mad. And, you know, my personality, it's like spicy, you know what I mean? It's like, he'd say, listen, your personality is killing you. That's what's killing you. Man, how hard do you think you're hang on to the drinking? How hard do you hang on to who you are right now? How hard do you hang on to your identity right now, who you are right now, which is killing you, and you don't even know who you are right now? All you know is you don't like it. But God forbid somebody says you should change it, you know, that's good for a slap in the face, you know? Because we're defiant, because that's part of our personality. That's part of our chief characteristics. So it says if we're painstaking about this, we're going to know a new freedom, you're going to know something completely different. It's going to be unbelievable. This ninth step is going to play into that. It says, you won't regret the past or wish to shut the door on it, which means, if that's a promise, that you won't regret the past and you won't wish to shut the door on it, what that means is right now, if you're an alcoholic, part of your alcoholic life is that you regret the past, whether you believe it or not. Whether you know, remember that part in the big book where it says selfishness, self-centeredness? That's the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. We step on the toes of others. What does it say? 100 forms of fear, self-delusion? That's 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. Do you know what that means? That means it comes at you at least 100 different ways. That means, like, if you can name three right now, we say, okay, name three ways that you have fear, self-delusion, and self-seeking. You can name three ways, you got 97 left to go that you don't even know about. That means if you can list five, you got 95 left to go that you haven't even figured out yet. And you don't even think of them. Guess what? You don't even think of them as fear or self-delusion. It's just, you know what it is? It's just your personality. It's just the way you are. That's just the way I am. I always act like that. I always do things like that. You'd do a thing like that too if you were me. If it happened to you, you'd do it too. You know what I mean? You know, you do it too. It's these things you start learning about yourself that are going to, you know, so it says, we're going to know new freedom. So this gives us a little insight into who we really are if you're an alcoholic. We will not regret the past. So it says in that part where it says, alcoholics are an extreme example of self-overing right. Remember what it says? Though we usually don't think so. Which gives us real insight into the fact that we have no insight whatsoever. So you don't even know. And you don't know what you don't know. I mean, if you don't know it, you don't know, you don't know it. You know, it's just there, and all it does is sort of, all it does is every once in a while you say, why the hell is this happening to me? You like to be befuddled. You say, why is this happening to me? Why is it happening to me? It's happening to you because you're you. You're like drawing it to you. You're making it happen. You're volunteering for it. You're saying, you're walking around with a sign, hit me, fire me, shoot me. You know, and that's why it's happening to you. We are going to know a new freedom and new happiness. Will not regret the past. So if you're an alcoholic, I can tell you right now, you regret the past. Now you can say, If you're an alcoholic, you say, I don't regret the past at all. But you see, that's just a lie you tell yourself. So that you don't have to blow your brains out. And you can make believe that you're somebody you're not. And feel good about yourself. Because if you really understood what's really going on with you, you get really depressed. So you tell yourself all sorts of lies about who you are and what you are, so you can feel like you're okay. But you're not okay at all. It's all back there. That's where the voice is. That's where the committee. That committee, that's what they're talking about. You won't talk about it, so the committee's talking about it. That's what the committee's doing. That's why the committee's there, to talk about the shit you don't want to talk about. You know? We will comprehend, yeah. What do you think, like the committee's like some other guy? Like, what do you think you say? Oh, the committee's been, what is it? You think it's like Irving or something? You know, this guy from, it's like you. You know, it's you. That's not the committee, it's you. You think you is the guy that's sitting right here. No, the guy that's sitting right here talking to me, that's not even you. That's the committee dressed up in a costume. You know what I mean? It's like Halloween time. Okay. So, you know, it's a tough thing when you feel you're a piece of shit, but you also think you're the best thing in God's world. You got both those things going for you. It's kind of confusing, you know? Am I John Wayne or Adolf Hitler? You know, what am I? No matter how far down, here's this. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. That's part of the promises. The feeling, right? Is that part of the promises? They read these things at meetings, don't they? So you know what that means? That means that if you're an alcoholic, you feel useless. Because the feeling of uselessness can't disappear if it hasn't appeared already. You understand what I'm saying? So if you're an alcoholic, you feel useless. So if you come up to me and you say, you know, I don't know, I don't feel good, there's something wrong, I'm not feeling good. I said, well, that's because you feel useless. You say, I don't feel useless. I say, no, that's just the costume talking. You know what I mean? Trust me, you feel useless. Go with that. Go with that thought. You know what I mean? Things are going to work out. You know, you feel useless. That's why they tell you to do things like make the coffee. That's why you say, you know, I started making the coffee, I started feeling better. That's why they say sponsor people. I started sponsoring people, I feel better. That's why they say, why don't you chair the meeting? I chair the meeting, I feel better. That's why when somebody comes up to you and you help them, they start smiling, you feel better. Because on your own, by yourself, you're an alcoholic. You feel like a useless piece of crap. God forbid somebody should tell you that, you know. You know what I mean? You'll slap them around, but that's why you feel, that's why. So anything that'll happen, now, you see, now what you used to do is you used to drink alcohol. It didn't make you useful, but you used to make believe you were useful, you know. Now in here, you can actually be made useful, and as you're made useful, you feel that feeling of uselessness disappears, and you feel great, and you don't know what it is. All you know if you do it, and here's the crazy thing, your alcoholic life, which is the only normal one, says don't do this shit. So everything that basically is about you that's alcoholic is working against the steps. They're counterintuitive. Everything about the steps, you'd never discover this on your own. Everything about the steps goes counter to your natural way of thinking. You understand what I'm saying? You don't want to do any of this stuff. And your natural predilection, as that right-handed type of thing, is to do it quite the opposite. But everything they tell you to do in here deals with this alcoholism, this that we think is normal to us. Seems natural to us. So it says that feeling of uselessness will disappear. So if you're an alcoholic in here, you know, part of your problem is that you feel useless. I don't care. It doesn't matter if you're a great lawyer, a great doctor, you still feel useless. Something about you feel useless. And that feeling of self-pity will disappear, which means if you're an alcoholic, you feel sorry for yourself most of the time. You just feel sorry for yourself. You lose interest in selfish things, you gain interest in your fellows. You know, which means we're selfish, you know. That's, you know, what the promises basically tell you is when they start telling you you're going to get all these things, they're telling you you got all this stuff right now going for you in a negative way. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude, outlook on life will change. Fear of, oh, this is a good one. I like this one because it's a big one. Fear of people. It says fear is the corrosive thread that runs through our lives. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. If you're an alcoholic, now I know this. I know this is very hard to get across to alcoholics. They don't want to believe it. They don't believe it. They do not believe it. They do not want to believe it. They will go through any mechanism, any logical mechanism to tell you that it's not true, that you walked out the wrong guy, that you're making a mistake. They'll yes but you to death, you know. But the bottom line is alcoholics are scared crapless of other people. We're scared crapless of other people. We're scared about their judgments. We're scared about what they're going to think about us. They're scared about whether they're going to laugh at us. They're scared about whether they're going to find us funny, you know, or they're going to accept us. We're scared about sexual relationships. We're scared about intimacy. We're scared about, you know, whether or not we're going to ever get anybody to love us. We're scared of where we are petrified of other people. That's why when we get together in groups, we drink a lot. That's why alcoholics, that's why they invented things called bars. You know, where people who are scared and hate other people can come together and drink a lot and feel like they like people. And maybe if you get really, and if you really get drunk, you can have sex. You know what I mean? Which is really scary as shit sober. You know what I mean? Sure, you're laughing. You don't know what it's like, but you know. You know, that's the bottom. You're scared. Men are scared of women. Women are scared of men. Men are scared of men. We're just all scared of each other. Now, you just try to tell an alcoholic who just comes in here, wisdom, go through this stuff. You're just scared of people. They'll say, you know, what are you, nuts? I love people. I'm great with people. People love me and everything like that, you know. And all we do is think about what are other people thinking about us. What do you think they're thinking? You know, we're it's everything out of an alcoholic's mouth. You know, if you ever, you know, I get to sponsor a bunch of people. I love sponsoring people, really, to a certain extent, you know, but. Well, you know, sponsoring people is fun if you know how to do it. I mean, there's a learning period of about 20 years, you know, because, you know, that's why they have Al-Anon, because of the effect. Alcoholics have effects on other people. You know, somehow, the genius of the alcoholic is no matter how crazy they are, if you come in contact with them, you will feel you have to fix them, and if something goes wrong in their life, it's your fault. You know what I'm talking about? And believe me, they will play on that. They will allow you to believe that and throw gasoline on that fire. You know what I mean? Now, they'll say things like, you got to listen to me, you know? When you don't have to listen to them at all, you know? They have to listen to you. They'll say, you know, they'll tell you don't understand. And you'll start thinking. They'll say it so many times, you'll start thinking you really don't understand. You know what I mean? And they do. You know, I mean, they've got all sorts of ways and little things they can do that drive you crazy. Okay, so, but after you get past that, and you realize they're really out to drive you crazy and they're really nuts, then you don't have to feel so sorry for them, and you don't have to let them affect you. But you know, that's the thing. They're scared of other. We're scared of other people. It says, what is that feeling of self? It says fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. And of money, of not having money. You know? So then you start thinking about your discussion meetings. Then you get to go to your discussion meetings. And you start thinking about, in discussion meetings, what are people talking about? What do people talk about in discussion meetings? They talk about other people and problems they're having with other people. Interesting, right? You know, we have a book that says, wife or no wife, job or no job. You know, they let every alcoholic say it's nonsense if they say they got to get it back. You know, just trust in God and clean house. The only thing is to be your relationship with God. See to it, your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. It's interesting. We have a book that basically says and professes that which is completely opposite of what we think. We think if only everything cleared up with my job, if only everything cleared up with the money, if only everything cleared up with my car, if all that just happened, then I could lose like 20 pounds, you know what I mean? And get that new dress or that new car, everything would be okay. And you've got to work on that for the next 20, you worked on that for 20 and 30 and 40 years, right? Hey, and guess what? And you're still working on it, aren't you? You're still working on it, we're all still working on it, you know? It doesn't work, does it? It's never worked. It's never worked for you. And that doesn't mean you haven't been successful. Sometimes you're on top of the hill, sometimes you had the money, and it never really worked. It was never permanent. You can never, it's like nailing jello to the wall. It was never working, right? And you come in here and they say, drop everything else, drop every person, and just focus on God and your relationship with God, and you don't want to do that. You don't even want to hear that. You want to keep on hanging on to the old idea that if you get your material life settled down, you get everybody in your life settled down, then that would work out. That's what you want to hang on to, and it just doesn't work for you. But you don't want to give that up. You want to buy into the God thing, and that's the only thing that works, and that's what this thing is all about. That's what step 11 is all about. That's what step 3 is all about. That's the deal. So, and somehow, some way, and I don't know how this works, that as I buy into that God deal, as I buy into focusing on it, you know, and it says right after that, after the fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us, it says, then we're going to know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. That's another thing, we're befuddled by life. Life like overwhelmed. Anybody ever here ever felt overwhelmed by life? I mean, it's just coming at you too fast. You know, I mean, it's just way too fast, too much, over your head. I can't take it anymore, you know? I can't deal with it anymore. I used to drink and run away from it. What happens when you stop drinking? You got to deal with it. There's too much between the IRS and between this one and that one, and the people in the rooms and the club room and all that sort of stuff. It's a difficult thing. And then it says we realize that God's doing for us what we can't. You know it says God's doing for us what we can't do for ourselves? You know it says to get rid of all these things? You can't do it. You got people in here trying to get rid of all these things and trying to get better. They're trying to do it. And you know what the book says? If you do this thing right, you finally realize that you haven't done it. That God's done. And you got people here trying to do it themselves and they can't do it and they keep on falling down. They can't understand why they're falling down when they're trying so hard. They're going to so many meetings, you know, they're doing so much stuff, they're doing so much activity, so much work, they're trying real hard to do it, and it's not being done. It's because it says right here in the promises, you can't do it. The people who are doing it and getting it done, they realize that it's getting done because they're not doing it. Because God is doing it. And there are people in here that will understand exactly what I'm saying. As a matter of fact, they'll have gone through it, they'll know exactly what I'm saying. And there'll other people in here will say, I don't understand a word this guy's saying. It makes no sense to me whatsoever. All I can do is keep on saying what I'm saying, keep on saying what the big book says. And somehow, some way, I get involved, I get sucked into this thing, and it happens, and you know, I pray to God, and it's all part of like, you know, I can't even explain how it happened to me. What happened? Some guy gave me a 24-hour book. It said, get on, I mean, I'm a kid from New York, you know, and I'm, you know, I believe in, you know, the Playboy Club, and, you know, Playboy, you know, get me a Playboy model, or a bunny or something, get me a car, and make me, I want money, and an American Express card. Some guy hands me a 24-hour book, and says, I want you to ask God every morning for the help to stay sober, to keep you sober during the day. I want you to read the 24-hour book, and I want you to thank him at night, and I do it. Why did I do it? I don't even know why I did it. I was desperate, I didn't want to drink. You know what I mean? Everybody doesn't do that. A lot of people do it. I did it. It works on you. It plays tricks on your mind. You get brainwashed, you know? Like, yeah, you do, you know? I said to my sponsor, you brainwashed me. He says, well, maybe your brain needs washing. You know, that's what he's, you know, it's an old line. Maybe, so I did that stuff. So they tell you to do things. And in almost every exercise I got involved in, especially if you're reading this book, you know, the book's almost every exercise I got involved in, somehow, along the way, God was involved. None of these exercises were devoid of God. You know, if you read this big book the way I read it, whether I understand God or not, or know who God is or not, everything I was involved in here, every line that comes in here, somewhere along the line, God comes in the picture. They say things like the promises. God is doing for you what he can't do for ourselves. You know, if you sincerely take such a position, all sorts of remarkable things happen. You know, being all-powerful will give you everything you need if you perform his works well and stay close to him. It's there all the time if you open yourself up to it and you see it. And then all of a sudden, somehow, some way, you go to you get your first day, your first minute, your first hour where you don't have fear, where you're not scared. And that's, you know, you don't realize how scared you are, how much fear you have, you know, how much it's weighing you down, how much bondage in what that new freedom is until you go for that first hour or that first day fearless, without fear. And it's such an incredible feeling. And it happens sober. And then it's like gone. You know what I mean? It's like gone. It's like gone, you know? And you know, I was talking to this young lady over here and she says, yeah, I feel great now. She says, but I know something bad's going to happen. I know I feel great now, but I know something bad's going to happen because that's the way it always is. And I said to her, I know she's looking at me strange, like, why would I even say that? I said, why do you even think that? I know, well, I asked her a question that I knew about. I knew the answer. I knew the answer, but I asked her the question anyway. I said, why do you think that? And she looked at me and says, what are you talking about? What do you mean, why do I think that? Got a little upset with me, you know? Why would you even ask me a question like that? Because that's the way it's always been. I said, yeah, but why would you think that? Even if that's the way it always is that way, why would you allow yourself to think it? You know? Maybe it'll be wonderful forever from now on. Why not think of it that way? You know, why not think of it that way? Well, I know why she thinks it. She thinks it because she's an alcoholic. Because that's the way alcoholics think. That's part of the problem. That's the way you think. So try to tell an alcoholic, stop thinking that. They'll say, how do you do that? Because they don't know how to do that. Because, you know, they can't stop drinking, they can't stop thinking, and they can't stop thinking like that. You know? So my sponsor asked me one day, he says, you want to stop drinking? I said, yes. Yes, I want to stop drinking. What if they asked you this? Do you want to stop thinking? Do you want to stop thinking like that? I said to one guy today, you want to stop thinking like that? He said, no. I said, no. He said, no. And I know why he said no. He gave a good answer. He says, because I start thinking like that, he says, I'll lose my edge. And I won't be alert. And then something bad will happen to me because I won't be on my defenses. You know what I mean? Because I'm constantly looking for the cops, for the this, for the that. You know what I mean? It's because I'm looking, and I'm constantly looking for this, like this guy, and this guy. He says I won't get hurt, and I can manage my life. I said, so you plan, that's your deal? That's your plan for like the rest of your life? Yeah, that's his plan. That's his plan, and he's sticking to it. You know what I mean? Hey, you know something? That's all alcoholic. That's the alcoholic life. That's the alcoholic life. That's the life alcoholics live. That's why alcoholics drink. You know, when you say, now I know why I drink, they drink because who could stand that kind of life forever? They drink because it's the only time they can get some relaxation and some time away from the fear. You know, so they don't have to experience it. They can sort of like, you know what they can do? It's like, drinking is like committing suicide, but you get to come back to life again. Well, that's it. It's like blowing your brains. You know, that's why when alcoholics stop drinking, the next thing that comes logically after that is killing yourself. So you don't think of it as you say, no, I don't feel like drinking. I feel like killing myself. You know? Because drinking at least, you can commit suicide, but then you're alive on Wednesday. You know what I mean? So you come in here, it's like a step up, you know? I used to think it was a problem. I used to think killing myself, was a problem. Until I realized that it actually showed I was getting better. Because when you think about killing yourself rather than thinking about drinking, it shows you really made a commitment. You know what I mean? And then my doctor, I went to a psychiatrist because I was a little, I thought I would have mentioned it. Those guys said, you know, I'm constantly thinking about killing myself. He says, well, have you bought a gun? I said, no. You know, well, have you bought some poison? I said, no. I said, have you taken any steps to do it? He says, no, I just think about it all the time. He says, that's normal. Normal shit. You know, it's like when you have your first alcoholic dream, you know, you dream about drinking alcohol. Why am I dreaming about drinking alcohol? He says, because you're an alcoholic. That's what alcoholics dream. Listen, it's a blessing to dream about drinking. You know, you feel like you're drinking, like you slipped, and then you wake up and you haven't, you feel so good. It's like you get to slip, but you don't have to pick up another chip. You know what I mean? And then all of a sudden it scares the shit out of you, and it's like, I feel sorry about the guys that aren't dreaming about drinking. You know what I mean? Those are the guys that got problems. You're drinking things are great. So I got so many ninth step stories, you know, ninth step stuff, you know, that I did. You know, the ninth step is pretty straightforward. The step is straightforward. You do the eighth step, you do the list first, you got a list of people, comes right out of the fourth step, right? You got all those people, you know who they are, you know. Well, at first you don't know who they are. When you're doing your fourth step, you know, my sponsor said to me, he says, well, you put down a list of resentments. There's four lists in the fourth step. I'm not going to go through them, but one of the lists is a list of resentments, who you resent, you know. And I said to him, I said, I don't resent anybody. By the time I got to actually listing them, when I got into my family, I listed them, there were like 30 people on the list. I mean, there were guys on the list that never did anything to me. I mean, there was a guy on the list that never did anything to me. He just looked better and he could buy suits off the rack, you know what I mean? He was like my, quote, best friend. And I always felt uncomfortable around him. I always felt, you know why? Because he was like funny. I just felt less than when I was around him. You know, then all of a sudden I realized why I was always bragging when I was around him. Then all of a sudden it made sense why when they'd say, you know, I would always embellish my stories a little. I would always name drop. Or I'd always say I was making more money than I was when I was around him because I felt so less than around him because he was on the list. And I didn't even realize he never even did anything about me. He had, you know, his crime was being alive and breathing on the same planet at the same time I was, you know? And make me feel bad because he was like thin, you know what I mean? That was his crime, you know. But I wouldn't know that. I wouldn't. All I would know is I would walk away from a meeting with him where I would lie about something, and I'd say, why did I say that? Why did I lie? What if they find out? And everything. And I wouldn't even know why I would lie. It would just come out. You know what I mean? I would just come out, and it was always a lie to make myself look better. And I didn't even know why I was doing that. Because I was scared they wouldn't like me, and I was scared they wouldn't accept me, and I was scared. But you don't think about that if you're an alcoholic and not involved in this program. That's just the normal way of life as an alcoholic. To lie and name drop and, you know, embellish and exaggerate, you know, about yourself and make yourself look better and stuff like that. That's just the normal way of life. And then regret it afterwards and feel sorry for yourself afterwards and then drink over it afterwards and feel like a piece of crap after. That's just like a normal alcoholic life. That's the way we deal with people, and that's the way we act, and that's the way we are. And we don't even think of it as alcoholism. We don't think it's just, hey, it's just my personality. It's just my personality. That's just the way I am. You know what I mean? And you know, you start making amends to these people. You know, you start making amends. And, you know, the things that I do, you know, that I punish myself for, you know, that deep down inside that I, and, you know, I think I forget these things just because they're not foremost in my mind. I never forget them. They're all there. You know, all the crap that I've done in my life to other people, to hurt other people, it's all there in the back of my mind. And I already told you about the story with my son and how I didn't pick him up that day, and I went off on the boat and everything, and I'm drinking, I'm saying he's better off. Man, there's so many times I did things to hurt people, and I was irresponsible that I sort of repressed and I said, oh, it's no big deal. And like, if I wouldn't be thinking about it, I think I'd forget about it, and I'm drinking, but it's all back there. It's all stuff that adds up, you know, why I'm such a piece of crap and how I feel bad about myself. And so I make this list and I go out and, you know, the thing about the ninth step is the courage. The courage to do it. And where's the, for me, the courage had to come from God. I'm an alcoholic. I don't have the courage. If I had the courage to live my life in a courageous way where I could go up to people and say, you know, I lied to you. I took, you know, whatever it is I did, I was wrong. If I had the courage to do that, I wouldn't be in Alcoholics Anonymous. I wouldn't be here. I'd be out there enjoying my life, feeling free and all that sort of stuff. You know, the truth of the matter is I'm powerless not only of the alcohol, I'm powerless over all that stuff. I'm powerless over apologizing the right way. I don't even know, I mean, I could say, you know, I know how to say this, you know what I mean? Yeah, I did this to you and I'm sorry I did it, but you shouldn't have done that. You know what I mean? I know how to do it that way. And then say, you know, well, you know, what's the long face? You know, I said I was sorry. You know, I know how to apologize and be. I know how to apologize for hurting somebody and being angry at him at the same time, for forcing me in the position where I have to apologize to him because I feel sorry for myself. I know about that kind of apology. I know how you can apologize to a person, you know, for killing his son or daughter or hurting somebody or robbing the bank, and at the same time hating them and taking it out on them and hurting them even more. And then, you know, and then excusing yourself and walking away and say, that son of a bitch, you know, I was trying to help him and he didn't, you know, and then have all sorts of conversation. I know how to do that because I'm an alcoholic and that's just my personality, you know. That's my personality sober. I can do that stuff sober. It's easy for me to do that, you know. That's the way and if you can do that easy and if it feels comfortable to you and that's the way you do it and that's the way you act. And no matter how much you try to apologize, it all seems somehow, some way, they always take it the wrong way. And it's never your fault. It's somebody else's fault. You understand what I'm saying? You might be in for a really crappy life. You might not get that new freedom and that new happiness. You know, it's hard. It's hard to live a sober life without God, without faith in God that allows you to have the courage to do this stuff the right way. It's just impossible for an alcoholic like me. It's just impossible for an alcoholic like me. I just can't, the ingredients that they want you to put in the milkshake, the ingredients that they want you to put in is impossible for me as an alcoholic unless I have a belief in God. That's the only way I can do it. And, you know, if I try to put it in without that belief, without that thing, you know, I'm just going through the motions, somehow it's missing the secret ingredient for me. The secret ingredient of gratitude, of love. You know, they keep on talking about, every once in a while you hear these people say, well, they invented a pill for alcoholism. Really? Really? They have a pill that will give you integrity? An integrity? They give you a pill that will give you love? Help you love other people and care about other people? They got that pill yet? See, because until they have a pill that gives you integrity and gives you self-respect and self-esteem, all these other pills are bullshit. They ain't gonna work. That's not the, you know, they're gonna do something for you, but they're not gonna, they may make you happy, send you to Happy Dale. You know, may you know, whatever it is they're gonna do, but they're not gonna give you integrity. They're not gonna make you give you self esteem. They may even rob you of your self esteem. It may be just one more thing that robs you of your self esteem. You know, pushed upon you by drug companies that, you know, make billions of dollars and everything. And I'm not putting down anybody for taking, you know, you go with your doctor and all that sort of stuff. I'm just telling you to lie. Hey, listen, I'm just giving you stuff to think about a different way. But I'll tell you something. You go with this God thing, which is, by the way, in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it's part of the program, and you do it this way. You know, I sit down with my sponsor, John Glenn, my current sponsor. He's like 56 years sober, Baptist preacher. You know, I sit down with him, and, you know, I'm a Jewish kid from New York, you know that. I sit down with, you know, I'm Presbyterian now, whatever that is. But, but anyway, that's another story. But I sit down with my sponsor, and before we eat, and I got to be honest with you, sometimes I forget it. Before we eat with my sponsor, we do it all the time. He says we got to pray. And whether we can be at Burger King, we can be in a fancy restaurant, we can be anywhere, we pray. We pray. We do the whole bit, you know what I mean? Blah, 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 in Jesus' name. We do the whole thing. In the table, people, we do blah, blah. And then he looks at me, and he says, now, Russ, he says, now it has the secret ingredient. You know what I mean? You know, he says, the food will taste better now because it has the secret ingredient. I love my sponsor. I love to surround myself with men. You know, he's introduced me to other men. I'm surrounded with men like my sponsor. You know, we draw other men to us, and we do the same thing. Every day we have lunch, we do the same thing. 10, 20, 30 men, we do the same thing. It's incredible. It's incredible how these steps will work, how the 9th step will work, how the 8th step will work, how these steps will have. And you know something? When you do all this stuff, and you do it right way with the secret ingredient, you know what happens? You have a new freedom, and you have a new happiness. No matter how far down the steps you've gone, you know, you'll see where you can help others. That feeling of uselessness, self-pity, it just disappears just like that. You know, fear of people and economic insecurity leave you. You realize things that used to baffle you can solve, like it's like inspirational thinking, like they talk about in the book. That's the way this thing works. I mean, it's simple, but it's impossible unless you have a total, complete mindset change. You got to change your entire paradigm from the person that refuses to go along with this. I was talking to a gal who's sober just a couple of days. You know, who's tried this thing and failed and tried and failed and tried and failed. And, you know, somebody wanted me to call her. I said, I won't call her. I said, if she calls me, I'll speak to her. But I won't call her. You know, I won't speak to an alcoholic unless they call me. You know, I never wanted anybody. The only power I have over an alcoholic, the only power I have over an alcoholic is to be able to say, listen, honey, you called me. I didn't call you. I never call alcoholics. Never. You know what I mean? If they're not willing enough to pick up a phone and call me up, they're not ready to stop drinking. You know what I mean? Because I know if I speak to an alcoholic for 5 minutes, she's going to hear at least 4 things that she's going to hate me for, or he's going to hate me for. You know? Because I know how I talk. I know I don't beat around the bush. You know? So at the first thing when they say, well, I don't want to blah, 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 I'm going to say, hey, listen, I didn't call you. You called me. Don't take that power away from me, okay? You know, and so the bottom line is, she called up and I said, listen, this is what I want you to do. She was calling up to tell me how she couldn't make it to a meeting. She had an excuse. But I was cool with it. I said, okay, I understand that. I said, I'll tell you what, I gave her some instruction. I said, why don't you try this? I said, let me, and I told her, I said, I know you have 2 little kids at home with you. And I know you love them. She says, yeah, I do. And I said, I know that you want to be a sober mom. She says, yeah, I do. And she started crying. I said, all you have to do, I said, you can have that deal. You can have that deal. I said, all you got to do is follow directions. You know, how are you at follow directions? She says, I'm terrible. He says, I know. I said, no. I said, but all you need to do is follow my directions tonight. Can you follow my directions tonight? She says, okay. And I told her something to do. And she said, she's going to do it. I said, all you have to do is do that one thing tonight. So you know what I mean? So that's the deal. You know, you just follow the directions of the book. These things aren't hard. You know, I'll tell you where they get hard and they get crazy, when you try to do your own program. When you say, well, you work your program and I work my program, you say, well, I'm going to work it, but I'm going to work it without the God thing. You know, you try to do your own deal. You understand? Just follow the directions. It's laid out in the book with the sponsor and everything like that. And follow directions, you can have that new freedom and that new happiness. Thank you very much. God bless you.